Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of February 3, 2020. A new newspaper debuted in Ford County this week, the Ford County Chronicle. We here at the Illinois Radio Reader are not privy to the background to all of this, but we do want to bring you all the news from Ford County, so we will be reading from both papers whenever possible. First this morning, we read from the Ford County Record. Judge gives green light to two trials for Ford County terrorism suspect. Urbana. The criminal cases against alleged domestic terrorist Michael Harry will continue in two venues, a federal judge has ruled, despite the Ford County's man's desire to have his charges joined and heard only in Minnesota. U.S. District Court Judge Michael Mim on Tuesday denied a defense motion to consolidate the weapons, criminal conspiracy, and attempted arson charges from the Central District of Illinois with charges stemming from the firebombing of a mosque in Minnesota and have them all heard in Minneapolis, where Harry's trial is set to begin February 18th. Harry, 48, of Clarence, has been in custody since March 2018. The charges in the Central District against him allege that he formed a militia group called White Rabbits in August of 2017 and set out to commit a number of jobs, robbing Walmart stores and alleged drug dealers in Illinois and Indiana, damaging railroad tracks in Illinois, and trying to set fire to a Champaign Women's Health Clinic. The former Ford County Sheriff is also charged with doing so while in possession of a machine gun and possessing firearms as a felon. Federal public defender Tom Patton argued it was a matter of judicial economy to combine the Central District charges with the Minnesota case, since the government has filed its intentions to introduce evidence of the crimes he is accused of committing in Illinois and Indiana in Harry's Minnesota trial. He also argued that presenting proof of the Central District crimes with the lower burden of preponderance of the evidence, as opposed to proof beyond a reasonable doubt, puts undue prejudice on Harry and could affect his decision to testify on his own behalf. But Assistant U.S. Attorney Eugene Miller objected, saying that Minnesota prosecutors may not put on all the same evidence that he intends to, and therefore two trials are necessary. In questions Mim put to Patton during the brief hearing Tuesday, the veteran judge said he was skeptical that the Minnesota prosecutors would call the same number of witnesses to testify for purpose of proof of other crimes evidence. "I respectfully disagree," Patton responded. "I have never seen the United States under-try a trial. The government still has to prove the events occurred. I would fall out of my chair if the government in Minnesota was allowed to introduce the Central District crimes and they don't call the alleged victim of the robbery in Ambia, Indiana. Same thing with the Walmart robberies, the railroad. The government still has to prove it has the evidence of consciousness of guilt. The victims have to testify twice in the government's proposal. That hardly shows concern for the convenience of the victims," Patton said. Miller countered that his colleagues in Minnesota do not intend to call certain witnesses from the Central District crimes and instead may put on the elements of those alleged crimes through two co-conspirators of Harry's who intend to testify. Mim questioned Patton on why the motion was filed on January 23rd when Harry's trial in Minnesota, which stems from the August 5th, 2017 firebombing of a mosque in Bloomington, Minnesota, has long been set for later this month. Patton responded that it was because Harry had only recently asked his defense team to do so. "It is not a frivolous motion, but I'm going to deny the motion to transfer," Mim said. Mim said if he granted the motion, the Minnesota judge would then have to decide if the Illinois charges were properly in that jurisdiction, and that could prompt a continuance. "In terms of proof of other crimes evidence, I don't know what this judge up there will allow. If it were me, I can't imagine I'd allow all this to come in," Mim said. Harry's jury trial in the Central District crimes is set to begin in Urbana on March 30th. And also in the Record, a love of toys. Paxton. "I'm 60, but I still play with toys. rural rank and farmer Chris Elliott isn't alone. A lot of people like playing with and collecting farm toys, as seen at Saturday's Paxton Buckley Lota FFA Farm Toy Show. It marked the 32nd consecutive year for the event, and as always, the gymnasium and stage area were full of farm toy items and farm displays. Elliott, who began farming on his own in 1980, has been to every farm toy show at Paxton since. His family likes to come along as well. His wife Janet and their two sons were also on hand. They had a display of John Deere farm toys in the gym. Elliott, who farms in Ford, Champaign, and Vermilion counties, isn't in it for the money. "You will not make money selling farm toys," Elliott said. "The satisfaction of coming to the shows is the people." "The friendships by far outweigh anything," Elliott said. "The people you meet are fantastic. Watching the kids grow up and they come back 10 years later and you remember when they helped you carry your toys in and you see them in Champaign. Hey, I know you." Kirsten Wyatt, who, with Mike White, serves as FFA advisor and ag teacher at PBL, said that students and alumni staged the show. She said she and White act as liaisons. Getting the FFA students, there are about 90 of them at PBL, involved is a learning tool. It gives them an opportunity to work with adults as well as helping them to build on the leadership skills for when they leave high school, Wyatt said. The show averages between 400 and 600 visitors each year. Laura Proctor and her committee of alumni members help with the concession stand. Another of the active alumni is Buckley resident Jim Biggs, who gets in contact with the dealers to notify them about the show and see if they need anything. Biggs said the show averages a little more than 30 dealers. 36 dealers turned out for Saturday's show, probably due to a mild forecast. "We usually sell over 100 tables," Biggs said. One dealer booked six. In addition to the sales and display tables, there are tables holding silent auction items. "A lot of individuals sell on that," Biggs said. "They pay a fee to have their items put on the silent auction." Most of the dealers hail from central Illinois, although some come from western Illinois, Indiana, and the Chicago area. Biggs has more than a passing interest in farm toys. He has collected them for years and focuses on the era when he was in high school, from 1962 to 1964. He tends to go green, primarily collecting John Deere with some Oliver toys. For Elliott, collecting isn't what it used to be. He got hooked in 1979 after he attended a show in Rantoul. Back in those days, you could just get in your pickup and drive around to local dealers and still find old stuff on the shelf, Elliott said. "We drove all over Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, but those days are gone. You can't anymore. It's been picked through and many of the dealers are gone." Elliott said at one time, Paxton had 4 farm implement dealers. Now it has none. That makes it more difficult to find vintage toys. Elliott displays his farm toys at 3 shows, PBL, Effingham, and Winnanami, Indiana. He said the PBL show is his favorite. "The people and the alumni group, the parents come back and are interested in the kids today, is what makes it special," Elliott said. Doug Anderson, former advisor, "How that bunch helped the guys. Boy, I admire that. That's hard to come by. They're good people. Mr. White and Kirsten Wyatt, when PBL calls, we help them." Bismarck residents Tyler Steinbaugh, who was among those with a farm display at the show, his display was titled Mississippi River Grain Terminals. Steinbaugh is following in the footsteps of his grandfather, who also likes to build farm displays. He said he was interested in the subject of the display because "I've never seen one." Half of Steinbaugh's display was purchased off the internet, but he modeled the office and the coffee shop from Bismarck, where a character he knew used to visit regularly and play cards. Nearby sat a Farmall tractor like the one an area farmer regularly parked there prior to cutting hay. It marked the 9th or 10th show for Steinbaugh. One of those on hand to rub shoulders with the showgoers was Kelly Berkey. Berkey and his 3 brothers started the International Harvester Farm Implement Dealership in Paxton back in the 60s. Berkey is long retired and the store is long gone, but he continues to stay involved. His wife Minerva accompanied him to Saturday's show with his customary red International Harvester farm toys. "I've been in Paxson since 71 with all those Swedes, but they haven't made a Swede out of me. I'm still German," Burkey quipped. The 91-year-old has been displaying since the first show opened. Last year, he bought some John Deere toys at a garage sale, and he said he got teased about it so much that he sold them. He used to have a room full of farm toys. He also collected antique farm equipment, restoring some of it, including corn pickers, combines, and the like, but has gotten rid of all of that except the Cub Cadets. "I really enjoyed it," Burkey said. "The thing is, you meet so many good people. I always said I've been very fortunate to sell farm machinery all my life to American farmers. Basically, good, honest people." That's all the news in the Ford County Record. Now let's look at the Ford County Chronicle, and we begin with an article entitled, "Paxton's Gigantic Flagpole Expected to be Built in April, $37,401 Raised So Far." Paxton. Assuming fundraising efforts meet expectations, a 150-foot flagpole will be installed north of Paxton Buckley Lota High School's football field in April, with landscaping around it completed in May and the raising of the flagpole's first 30-by-60 American flag in June, Paxton Fire Chief Denny Kingren said on Monday. Fundraising for the gigantic landmark, to be known as the Paxton Grand Ole Flag, began on Flag Day last June. As of Monday, when several of the largest donors gathered for a group photo at the Fort Frederick Community Bank in Paxton, $37,401 had been raised, according to the bank's vice president, Cody Keitzman. That number includes funds donated to the Paxton Grand Ole Flags project account at the local bank and proceeds from the sale of personalized bricks through That's My Bricks website, Keitzman said. Kingren hopes $65,000 can be raised to construct the giant flagpole immediately west of the high school, to buy an initial 3 or 4 30-by-60 American flags, and landscape the area around the flagpole. Even better, Kingren said, would be to have $75,000 to $80,000 raised, which would reduce the need for further fundraising to buy replacement flags and perform regular maintenance on the flagpole. If enough funds are raised in time, Kingren intends to have the flagpole put in place in April and its first flag raised on Flag Day on June 14th. On that day, the flag will be carried down Market Street downtown, then brought down Pell Street to its destination between the school and Interstate 57, where a flag-raising ceremony will be held. Standing 50 feet taller than both the water tower on Paxton's west side and the Hardee's restaurant sign, the flagpole should not only be clearly visible to fans attending the PBL High School Panthers home football games at Zimmerman Field, but it should also stand out as one of the most notable landmarks along the highly traveled Interstate 57 corridor. "You're going to be able to see it from some distance away," Kingren said last April. The personalized bricks that are purchased by community members, which can be engraved with the names of family members or friends, for example, will line a walkway leading to the flagpole, as well as a memorial-type structure to be built around it. Up to 1,000 4x8-inch bricks are being sold for $100 apiece, as well as some 8x8-inch bricks for $250 each. They are available for purchase through thatsmybrick.com/paxtonflag. Or by filling out an order form and dropping it off or mailing it to the Frederick Community Bank on North Market Street in Paxton. As of Monday, 91 bricks had been sold. Persons who are not interested in purchasing a brick but still would like to contribute toward the project can do so by sending a donation to the bank as well. The account is under the name of the nonprofit organization Paxton Pride to allow the donations to be tax deductible. To donate, checks may be written to Paxton Pride with Grand Old Flag or simply Flag listed in the memo line. For more information on the project, people can contact Kingren at 217-202-6398 or Keitzman at 217-379-2336. Now from Gibson City. After Queen of Hearts found, skate park fundraising at $180,000. Gibson City. The committee that has been raising funds for a proposed skate park in Gibson City is finished holding its weekly Queen of Hearts raffles, but it isn't quite done with its fundraising efforts just yet. Dale Denny, a member of the Ed Day Memorial Skate Park Committee, said that as of the final raffle last Wednesday, in which the elusive Queen of Hearts was finally revealed, awarding $157,597 to the lucky winner, Gibson resident Jamie Sexton, a total of about $180,000 had been raised toward the skate park to be built at the city's West Side Park. However, costs for the skate park raised from $200,000 to $350,000, so more funds still need to be raised. The next step will be to meet with skate park builders and narrow down options for the skate park's design and features. The 14-member committee will then obtain feedback from local school children about which design they prefer. Once that is done, the committee will seek sponsorships from local businesses to raise the rest of the money needed. It will then present a proposal to the City Council for its consideration before moving forward with the construction. While the Ed Day Memorial Skate Park Committee will no longer be holding its weekly Queen of Hearts raffles, the Gibson City Restoration Association will be. Starting this week, the association will be holding Queen of Hearts raffles each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the American Legion Post in downtown Gibson City to raise funds for the restoration of a building downtown. The jackpot starts at $2,000. And in area theater news, Paxton Theater to present comedy. Paxton. The Tri-County Players Theater Group will present the comedy Last Seance by Herb Hassler on February 14th to 16th, February 21st, and February 23rd at the Market Street Theater, 120 North Market Street in Paxton. The Friday and Saturday shows begin at 7 p.m. and the Sunday matinees are at 2 p.m. There is no show on Saturday, February 22nd. Attendees can bring their sweethearts to the show on Valentine's Day on February 14th for a special dessert theater. The cost of $15 includes the show and dessert at intermission. The cost for the other shows is $12. In Last Seance, directed by Tammy Belanger, Eunice is a flamboyant medium known as Madam Craft, played by Shirley MacIntyre. She offers seances for people who wish to contact their dead relatives or their pets, anything for a few dollars. Beatrice, her sister, played by Carol Latimer, assists her in finding out details about the deceased and is quick to throw in her 2 cents worth. Her daughter Lilith, Jessica DiBella, has her own side business, a psychic hotline. Unfortunately, her talent does not extend to gambling as she has gone into debt. Along comes Jake, Kevin Renfro. Is he from the online dating service or there to collect the debt? Or is he a frustrated magician? Rounding out the cast is George, played by Kevin Homburg, as Eunice's ornery husband. Spencer, played by Brandon Irish, George's shy, lovesick assistant. And a cast of customers, played by Heather Mintz, Sherry Janowski, Tammy Ross, Gareth Latimer, Chris Crosby, and Tammy Belanger. Reservations are encouraged and can be arranged by calling the theater at 217-379-7028. Walk-ins are always welcome. Now we'll turn to the Ford County obituaries for the week of February 2nd, 2020. There are no obituaries in the Ford County Record, the online version anyway, this week, so we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle. Barbara F. Jansen, Paxton. Barbara F. Jansen, 89, of Scottsdale, Arizona, formerly of Buckley, died Wednesday, January 29, 2020, in Scottsdale, Arizona. Funeral services were held Thursday, February 6th, at the Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Jem Houck officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the First United Methodist Church of Paxton. Kimberly Merle Cox. Normal. Kimberly Merle Cox, 67, of Normal, died Wednesday, January 29, 2020, at OSF St. Joseph's Medical Center in Bloomington. Cremation rites were accorded by the Knapp Rodinius Funeral Home in Gilman, where a memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 8th. The Reverend Brian King will officiate. Visitation for friends and family will be 1 hour prior to the service. Memorials may be made to the American Kidney Association or an organization of the donor's choice. Teresa Lynn Bolin, Cisna Park. Teresa Lynn Bolin, 49, of Cisna Park, died Saturday, February 2, 2020, at the Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. Cremation rites have been accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park. A graveside memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, February 9th at Maple Grove Cemetery in Milford. The Reverend William Dougherty will officiate. Memorials may be made to the Cure San Filippo Foundation. They may be sent to Karen Bolin, 306 Keller Halls Drive, Cisna Park, Illinois, 60924. Melvin G. Moore, Sibley. Melvin G. Moore, 85, of Sibley, died peacefully on Friday, January 24, 2020, at his home in Sibley. A celebration of life gathering will be from 3 to 5 p.m., Saturday, February 8, 2020, at the New Beginnings Christian Church in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson City Food Pantry, Gibson City Ambulance Service, or the New Beginnings Christian Church. James R. Jim Duke, Melvin. James R. Jim Duke, 82, of Melvin, died peacefully with his loving family at his side on Friday, January 31, 2020. Funeral services will be at 6 p.m. Saturday, February 8th at the Melvin United Methodist Church with the Reverend Liz Rice officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday, February 8th at the church. Dress is casual, as Jim didn't like pomp and circumstances. Memorial contributions may be made to the Melvin United Methodist Church, the Corn Belt Shrine Club, or the family. We return to the news with a story from the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District. New gym, part of planned $8 million GCMS project. Gibson City. The days of having only one elementary school gym, outdated locker room and restroom space, and a small high school weight room could soon be numbered for Gibson City Melvin Sibley students. Those benefits, and others like it, are cited as the factors behind a proposed $8 million renovation project slated for 2021 that would change the look of the GCMS School District's facilities and modernize them to today's standards. Both GCMS High School and GCMS Elementary School are set to be impacted by the changes, which, if approved, would be done during the 2021 summer break, according to Superintendent Jeremy Darnell. We're going to maximize space within the ground that we have while still being cost conscious, he said. The largest item on the $8 million project agenda is a new multipurpose room at the elementary school, which will be attached onto the school's cafeteria in a grass area north and east of Circle Drive. This is going to be big enough to have a split gym like we have at the middle school, so you can run up to two practices immediately after school, so you can help families with transportation, not having to get up for early morning hours and such, Darnell explained. Along with sports practices, the new space is expected to be used during school hours, mainly for auxiliary gym space and as a recess area. The current elementary school gym is used all hours of the day, meaning indoor recess periods have to be held in classrooms. The space will not be a traditional gymnasium, rather a practice space for the district's athletic teams. Not having bleacher space will increase the area available for the building itself, Darnell said. We're allowing more flexibility to how we approach our programs during the day. 500 kids now have an additional space that can be utilized for PE classes, indoor recess, and daily events. There's going to be some added cost with the building, but you will have some decreased costs because you won't have as much staffing costs. Darnell said his idea is to have an L-shaped structure consisting of the practice space as well as locker rooms and a fitness center at the end of which will replace the current unattached weight room at the south end of the football field. In turn, the current weight room and concession building will be completely remodeled to increase the number of bathroom spaces as well as locker room size. Cost estimates for the concession building project are $100,000. Also at the elementary school, the building's library space is slated to be completely transformed. Darnell said the classroom teaching hole will be filled in to make it handicapped accessible, and the side areas and intervention classrooms to the east will be removed to accommodate more student needs. By closing in and reinventing how these spaces work, we're going to provide more office space for student support, he said. The $500,000 library project will modernize the library space and bring it up to date with current standards. The library has not been remodeled since the school was built in 1974. Egress windows will also be installed at the elementary school as part of the renovation work, and a new rubber flat roof will be installed at an estimated cost of $1.7 million. The high school building will also have changes made. All of the school's restroom facilities will be upgraded to modern amenities, and the two locker rooms will be gutted and replaced with new equipment to a modern flair. The high school band and choir room will be fitted with acoustic panels, and the stage will be gutted and transformed into a modern performance area. Darnell said the project is still in its preliminary stages, and a lot more work needs to be done before it can be approved. We will present information to the board at its meeting in February, he explained. At that point, we will move forward with the seeking of bids and also the design phase. Construction on the new multipurpose building could begin as early as this fall, Darnell said, while work on the elementary school library and a high school could be done entirely during the 2021 summer break. Financing is expected to come from multiple revenue sources, including the reissuing of bonds, debt certificates, and reserve funds, he explained. Taxpayers would be on the hook for some of the project cost, but its impact would be largely minimal, instead utilizing money from an expected increase in property values. There will be some adverse effect on the tax rate, but not much, Darnell said. And that's all the time we have for today. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.